Good morning, welcome to Medicine on Call. This morning is a really important show because it's about educating us on what single payer really is. We've heard a lot of talk about it over the last 8 years as if it's the panacea for our healthcare system. And I think Obamacare has gone a long way towards pushing us towards a single payer system. But when people use the adage of we should do what Canada's doing, we should do what the UK is doing, nobody's really lived there. Nobody can really talk about it. And I actually wanted somebody who could speak to this, a former Canadian who's now an American, Ms. Sally Pipes, who is the president and chief executive officer of the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank founded in 1979, also founder of Benjamin Rush Institute, I don't know if it's a think tank per se, but it has chapters in medical schools and is educating our medical students to be free thinkers, to be critical thinkers, and to be independent. And what I wanted Ms. Pipes to come on to talk about today was her new book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare. And this is one of many books that she's written, and I think that she's become and is a policy expert, someone who understands what's good and bad about healthcare and can help us navigate through this Affordable Care Act, you know, swamp that we're currently in. So, Ms. Pipes, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's early on the West Coast, but I'm delighted. I love talking about and educating Americans on what, you know, the false promise of single payer or Medicare for all healthcare is.
Well, let's just kick it off. You know, when people were crafting the Affordable Care Act, they made it sound like as if Medicare for all would save costs, would give everybody something free for nothing, and it would be the antidote to our healthcare system. How do we get to this point? Let me ask that question first.
Right. Well, I think let's have a quick definition of single payer.
Good.
And I think because very few people don't understand what single payer means. Single payer means there is a single payer for our healthcare, and that payer is the government. So, you know, it means that no private insurance is allowed under a single payer, a true single payer system, such as in Canada, where private health care for anything medically necessary is banned. And I think a lot of Americans don't understand that Canadians can't have private care as well as government care, and that is absolutely outlawed. And Canada is one of 9 countries just released in a study by the OECD showing that Canada is actually the only country that has a true single payer system. I think, you know, the Affordable Care Act just celebrated its 8th birthday on March 23rd, last Friday. And I think when President Obama was designing Obamacare along with the other architects, they realized that, you know, they realized that they really wanted single payer, but that, you know, the American people weren't quite ready for that. So the Affordable Care Act, in my mind, was a stepping stone to single payer Medicare for all. And President Obama, before he was president, when he was a senator and giving speeches, he said that if he were designing a healthcare system, it would be a single-payer system. You know, in when people are polled today, the latest poll from the Kaiser Family Foundation shows that 59% of Americans polled like the idea of a single-payer Medicare for all system. But when you go ahead and say to them, well, you will have to face increased taxes in order to pay for this, support goes way down.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that some of the polls in California in particular have shown that people think, well, single payer, yes, for everybody, but because, you know, 160 million Americans have employer-sponsored insurance, they think they will be able to keep their employer-sponsored coverage and other people will be in a fully government-run system. And that is incorrect. All private insurance under Bernie Sanders' plan, under Keith Ellison's House plan, under these various plans such as SB 562 in California, they are all plans that mean no private insurance.
Now, the government has, you know, as many physicians have, opted away from Medicare because of all the regulations, because of all the rules. I can only imagine how unwieldy the system would be if you added, you know, if you put everybody in it. It can barely run now. It's actually running out of money. How much do you think, well, In terms of taxation, do you know, have any idea how many, what's the percentage of taxes of that Canadians pay for their health care system, and how you think that would translate to us?
So the Canadian government fully took over the health care system under the Canada Health Act in 1984, but it started back in the 40s when Tommy Douglas was the premier of Saskatchewan, and he was a socialist premier, and he started by taking over the hospitals and then the doctors, and pretty soon then it spread, you know, not just to Saskatchewan, but across the country. And, you know, I think very few people realize that in Canada, that when government says they're going to spend 11.2% of gross domestic product, compared to the 18.2% we spend in this country, definitely the highest in the world, but we're a very wealthy country. But when government says we're going to spend 11.2% of GDP in Canada, what happens is the demand for health care is much greater than the supply. Mm-hmm. And so what does government do? They have to ration care, and there are long waiting lists for care. So in Canada last year, 2017, according to the Fraser Institute, where I began my career as a junior economist, the average wait from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist was 21.2 weeks. That is over 5 months. And it's back in 1993, that wait was only 9.3 weeks, just over 2 months. So, you know, that is something that Americans have to get a grip. When government controls all the dollars going to health care, we too, just like in the UK and in Canada, would face long waiting lists. And people think, you know, that it's free. Well, it's not free. The average Canadian today pays $12,500 in taxes for a health care system that means long waiting lists for care and ration care. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Medicare in the beginning. You know, Medicare, which came into being along with Medicaid under Lyndon Johnson, the Great Society, in 1965, these programs are definitely, you know, on the verge of going bankrupt. But Part A under Medicare, the hospital part, is destined, according to the Medicare trustees, to be bankrupt by 2030 at a cost of over $1 trillion, almost double the cost of Medicare today. And, you know, because doctors, such as yourself, are reimbursed about 20% of what they get, lower than what they get for treating private patients, many doctors are not taking Medicare. One in three new Medicare eligibles cannot find a doctor because of low reimbursement rates. And in Medicaid, the program for low-income Americans, that number is between 38 to 42% below. So with a huge Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, a lot of the 76 million people in this country who are now on Medicaid, they are having a harder time finding a doctor, mm-hmm. and turning up at emergency rooms at increased rates, which that was what one of the reasons President Obama gave for doing Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was because emergency room use was very expensive and they wanted to get away from it.
Well, this is, you absolutely put it in an encapsulation that's wonderful, because that's exactly what's going on the front line. Not only the reimbursements, but it's also the stick that comes with it. If you underbill somebody, that's committing fraud in Medicare. You know, if you want to write a prescription for somebody, you can't do it because it's not on the formulary. So all of these things that are pushing us towards, you know, down a path that's giving our patients less, that's putting a yoke on what we can do as physicians, it's very distasteful, and a lot of people are leaving because of that. Now, you mentioned in Canada that it's the only game in town, right? There's no private system. Well, did it not create something recently, or is it still absolutely no private system, and it's only one way to pay for health care, just single payer? Has that changed at all?
Well, back in 2006, there was a case in the Canadian Supreme Court where a doctor in Quebec, Dr. Chaouli, filed a suit in Quebec and lost in the Supreme Court because he wanted to be able to bill patients privately, mm-hmm. and the court ruled that was not allowed. He had tried then to set up a mobile van to go to patients' homes in his van, because that would be a portable office, and the court ruled that was not allowed either under the Canada Health Act. So the case went to the Canadian Supreme Court, and, you know, not a conservative court. And Madam Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin, who's just retired as the Chief Justice, ruled in that case that the ban on private health care was illegal in the province of Quebec. So they won that case, but the issue of billing was not really solved. So go forward to today, And in Vancouver, there is a case right now before the BC Supreme Court. It's Dr. Brian Day, who is formerly, he was trained in the UK, came to Canada, came to Vancouver, and eventually set up the private Cambie Surgery Center, where they do 60,000 operations a year, and people pay privately for an MRI or a shoulder operation, hip operation. And the BC government said that what he is doing is illegal, even though Liberal politicians use the Cambie Surgery Center. The case started in 2016. Now here we are, it's almost April 2018, and the BC government keeps asking for deferrals on the case in the hopes, I think, that Dr. Brian Day, who's already spent $5 million defending what he is doing, that he will, you know, not be able to proceed with the case because he will run out of money. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the case is going forward in April, which is in a few days. And if he wins this case, this will really open up the Canadian healthcare system to more private alternatives. It's a very, very important case. And, you know, Americans, people come from all over the world to go to the U.S. because we do have the finest healthcare in the world. But for those Canadians who feel that they're on the waiting list for too long a time, 21.2 weeks on average from seeing a primary care doc to treatment by a specialist, but to get an appointment from a primary care doctor to an appointment with a neurosurgeon, that wait is 33 weeks. So, you know, that's 8 months. So many Canadians, if they think they have, say, a brain tumor, and they have to wait over 3 months to get an MRI, many come to the U.S. and pay out of pocket. And in fact, 63,000 Canadians out of a population of 35 million last year came to the U.S. and paid out of pocket for care when they thought their waiting time was too long. And these are not just wealthy Canadians, they're politicians who support single payer. They're Canadians who are middle income Canadians, but who are worried about their long term health.
That's tragic. I mean, I can only imagine what the stories that must come out of people who have been diagnosed, you know, delayed diagnoses, live with problems that need, like, I had a cousin who lived there, had sleep apnea, took, I think, a couple of years to be cleared to actually have surgery to relieve the obstruction. I mean, I can't imagine living in a situation like that. And we're told that Canadians are happy about it down here. What's the temperature there? Are people really happy, or are they just put up with it because it's all they got?
Well, I think, first of all, that, you know, many Canadians know nothing else. I mean, when I say that the Canadian healthcare system was fully taken over by the government in 1984, you know, for many people, you know, they know nothing else but that system. And the second point is that, you know, Canadians are very nice people. If they're told that they have to wait, you know, 3 months to get an MRI, for the most part, they will say, well, oh, well, that's the way it is. And so they're very polite, the same in the UK. But there was a recent poll that came out showing that Canadians waiting to get a specialist appointment are becoming increasingly upset, and very high poll numbers, because they are upset that they have to wait so long to get an appointment. You know, Canada has a shortage of doctors. They have a shortage of acute care beds. And this is because, first of all, you know, because the government can't afford to have, you know, to pay for so many doctors, there is a shortage. And one of my worries is that the best and brightest in Canada don't go into medicine, because each province, every doctor is employed by their province. They have their own health care practice, but they work for the provincial government, if whichever province they live in. So basically, they're like a union member. The government, provincial government, determines what procedures are going to be, what they're going to be paid for. And you may be the very best, you know, neurosurgeon, Elena, and I may be the worst, but we get paid the same because it's not a merit-based system. And because the pay is much lower than it is in the United States, you know, there is a shortage of doctors. And as I say, acute care beds. But that's what happens when government has to ration the cost of the money they're spending on healthcare. And the last point is that it's much cheaper to import already trained doctors, what they call IMGs, international medical graduates, than it is to train their own Canadian citizens in medicine. So an increasing number of doctors in practice in Canada are doctors who've been trained in other countries. And as long as they pass the test, that's fine. But, you know, the question is, are they equivalent to a Canadian-trained doctor in the terms of their knowledge, an American doctor? And in several cases, in my mother's case, you know, when you go to the to a clinic, you never get the same doctor. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, these doctors, you know, English was not their first language. And for someone who's older, it's more difficult to understand somebody, you know, who has an accent that they can't understand. And, you know, my own mother died as a senior of colon cancer because when she thought that she, you know, had a problem and went to her general practitioner, what we call a primary care doc there, he said, well, you know, we'll get you an X-ray. Well, as a doctor, you know that you don't detect colon cancer with an X-ray. Mm-hmm. And so I told her, I was living in the U.S., I said, you need to go call back and say you want a colonoscopy. And she did that. And he said, well, as a senior, we have way too many Canadians, you know, waiting 11 months to get a colonoscopy who are younger. And so she was denied that. Finally, when she was hemorrhaging 6 months later, she went to the hospital in an ambulance, spent 2 days in the emergency room at Vancouver General, 2 days in the transit lounge waiting for a bed in a ward. She got her colonoscopy, but died 2 weeks later from metastasized colon cancer. Rationing care in that way reduces the cost of healthcare. But there are just so many stories mm-hmm. of people like my mother who, you know, had their care rationed and you know, you don't have access.
You know, my condolences. I absolutely feel for what you just went through. And on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Do you have a problem with the feeling of something stuck in your throat? Throat tightness, bad breath, a chronic cough, or frequent throat clearing? Maybe you have acid reflux, which is a common problem. Or maybe you have persistent ear pain, ear clogging, or ringing in the ears, but have been told you don't have ear infections. Perhaps it's because you grind your teeth at night. Sometimes the symptoms don't seem to be connected to an underlying problem. Sometimes the answer to a nagging symptom that doesn't go away or respond to treatments can be found by having your doctor give you the time to explain exactly what's going on in order to discover the root of the problem. This is Dr. George from Medicine on Call. I believe in taking the time to perform a thorough examination, discuss the findings, and answer your questions, because I believe that our patients are empowered when they're given all the treatment options. It's simple. When you understand the problem, you get to decide which treatment option works best for you. It's all about the power of choice, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. For more information or to make an appointment, go to www.peachtreeentcenter.com. That's PeachtreeEntCenter.com, PeachtreeEntCenter.com. This is Dr. George from Medicine on Call. Healthcare reform is confusing, but one thing has become obvious. Whether it's finding an affordable insurance plan, keeping your doctor, or being able to afford needed prescriptions, navigating the healthcare system has become a challenge. With the loss of the Obamacare mandate, those needing help can now choose an affordable alternative. By joining Liberty HealthShare, you'll become part of a community of health-conscious Americans all over the country who want to control their own healthcare costs and choices. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It's an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share their medical needs, neighbor helping neighbor. Medical, surgical, and some alternative holistic treatments are covered without restrictive doctor and hospital panels. Plans start as low as $107 a month for an individual and $345 a month for a family. Healthcare without the hassle. What a simple concept. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org or call 1-800-714-6993. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. When I wrote my book, Big Medicine, I wanted readers to learn both how the healthcare system works and how to navigate the system to make it work for them. A supplemental policy from Aflac is a little-known but effective strategy to help cover costs of routine medical and dental care and catastrophic care such as cancer, kidney disease, heart attacks, and stroke. Imagine buying a policy that will pay you if you are diagnosed with a catastrophic medical condition or you need emergency care, no questions asked. Whether you're a small business owner who wants to cover your employees or you have a high deductible plan, buying supplemental policy provides coverage you can actually count on to be there when you need it. It also covers preventative care such as mammograms. Imagine being paid to stay healthy. It's a no-brainer. Learn more by texting Paid to Be Healthy to 36260 or go to www.affleck.com/Stephen_money.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having an important and I think a very enlightening conversation with Ms. Pipes, author of The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare. Before the break, we were actually getting into the more of the nuts and bolts of what it really means to have rationed care. And you've mentioned something that I think is happening right here in our country, almost an outsourcing of the workforce, of the healthcare workforce. We're seeing an influx of nurse practitioners, physician assistants, in addition to foreign-trained doctors. Is that also the case in Canada, where there's a lot of allied healthcare professionals also on the front line instead of physicians?
Well, I think this is an increasing trend, and I know a lot of doctors don't like it. But, you know, if you for certain procedures like vaccinations and things, I think physician's assistants can certainly do the job. But just to make a point, though, about the Canadian healthcare system, you know, many, many nurses left Canada because you belong to a union and the pay was not good. They could come to the United States and make a lot more money. Mm-hmm. If you look at what's going on in Britain under the National Health Service, we go to England, to London, every year after Christmas, and every year it's the same thing about the disasters under the National Health Service, the waiting times, all of these things. But this past January, when we were there, it was really at the National Health Service is in crisis. It's had a financing problem since it came into being in 1948, but it is really at a crisis point now. I mean, every paper, whether it was, you know, just a conservative paper, a liberal paper, a middle-of-the-road paper, all front-page stories on every single day, and it's still going on. In January, the NHS had to cancel 55,000 surgeries in the UK because they did not have enough beds to take these people. They had to eliminate the targets for ambulance drivers because ambulance drivers, there was a target that you could only drive around for 4 hours before you dropped a patient off at the A&E. They had to get rid of that target because the waiting time was much more than 4 hours. The National Health Service was telling patients that rather than, you know, waiting to go to a hospital in the UK, you should perhaps go over to France and get your surgery done there. So it is a complete catastrophe. And in the UK, they actually, under the National Health Service, allow private health care. 10% of Brits have private health care. They go to the NHS if they have a cold, mm-hmm. but if they need, you know, an MRI or they need heart surgery, cancer surgery, the 10% that have it will use the private health care system because the waiting times there are so very long. And, you know, there's a shortage not only of doctors in the UK. One recent doctor, NHS doctor, said the medicine in the UK is now that of a third world country. But, you know, there's a shortage of doctors and there's a shortage of nurses. They had a big plan where they wanted to bring in 600 new doctors into the UK from the US, and they would, you know, pay them and they would allow them to have time, you know, long vacations. Mm-hmm. But in fact, only 100 people responded to that. But, you know, I think the nurses union in the US now is very, very strong and behind a lot of these single payer initiatives, particularly here in California. It's the nurses union that has been pushing our state government. But, you know, a starting salary for a nurse in the National Health Service in the UK is $22,000. And, you know, here in the U.S., an average nurse is earning about $75,000. So, you know, it's really interesting to me how the nurses in the U.S. have become so militant and so pushing for, you know, a system where, you know, in the U.K. and in Canada, nurses are low paid and they work very hard, long hours, and they're overworked.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is room for nurses to do certain things and PAs to do certain things, but we're going to see more of that as the stress and regulations and limits on what doctors can do and what they're paid. We're going to see more of that in this country as well.
You know, I've always wondered, and I think in the back of my mind, I have this feeling that they're going to mandate at some point that doctors take Medicaid and Medicare, that they come under the power, the yoke of the government system or the government healthcare system in order to be licensed. And I'm seeing this trend where they want to have one license that's for all for the whole country, which is horrific. So if something happens or you run afoul of something like a peer review or whatever, you'll never practice medicine because it's like one system. You know, it's not state-driven. And once you do that, that means that gives you, or the government, extreme power on what doctors can and cannot do because they'll be completely under duress of, I won't be able to practice unless I fall in line. Have you seen anything in your studies, et cetera, about that sort of thing coming to pass?
Well, I think that is really what single-payer Medicare for All would actually, what would happen.
Okay.
There wouldn't be Medicare, Medicaid, and there wouldn't be private coverage. Everybody would be under the Medicare for All system. And so, you know, doctors would really be, as I said before, they'd be union members, they'd be paid by either the federal government, depending on how it's set up, or the state government, you know, agrees that they will pay, and you will be, you know, there will be a lot of codes for what you can do. I mean, but the big issue will be ration care, mm-hmm. and long waits for care. I mean, you certainly, if you look at Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan, which he first brought out when he was running against Hillary for the nomination for the Democratic Party back in 2016, he brought out his Medicare for All bill, and then, of course, he introduced it in the Senate last year. And, you know, there's no mention of, you know, how the system will be paid for and, you know, and who's going to pay for it. But the Urban Institute costed his plan out at $32 trillion over 10 years, which is $3.2 trillion a year, which is what we spend on healthcare in this country today.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it would mean, you know, higher income taxes, higher payroll taxes. I mean, if you look at Bernie Sanders' state of Vermont, which was the first state to actually, Governor Shumlin, the Democratic governor in 2011, signed a single-payer bill and was ready to go with it. And then in December 2014, he had to withdraw it because he said he didn't think the people of Vermont could afford the tax increases that would mm-hmm. be necessary to fund such a system. So, you know, these systems are expensive, but controls on doctors, and, you know, the fact is that a lot of doctors in Canada, for example, you know, retired early from medicine because they couldn't practice the kind of medicine that they wanted. And if states such as California or nationally, if we get a single-payer system, a lot of the best and brightest doctors will retire early, or if California got single-payer, they would move from California to Arizona or Texas where they could actually practice the kind of medicine that they were trained to do. And the best and the brightest kids will not go into medicine. We're already seeing a reduction in the MCAT scores of the applicants for medical school in this country today because, and particularly for kids whose fathers or mothers are doctors,
mm-hmm.
they're finding the stress of all of the, you know, the electronic health records, all of the regulations, very, very controlling and not what they want. And people, doctors that I debate on radio will say, well, you know, if we have single payer, we won't have to deal with insurers and filling all of this material in. My cousin is an ophthalmologist surgeon in Vancouver, and he said it's just amazing to him when he hears American doctors say, well, there's so much paperwork with insurers. He said, we have to file our paperwork with the provincial government, and they are not fast in paying. And in many cases, things get rejected and have to go back. So, you know, let's keep the healthcare system. We want a healthcare system in this country that does provide affordable, accessible, quality care. But we need many different types of systems because competition is what makes America great, not empowering the federal government or state governments to control our healthcare.
I couldn't have said it better. On that note, let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. When I wrote my book, Big Medicine, I wanted readers to learn both how the healthcare system works and how to navigate the system to make it work for them. A supplemental policy from Aflac is a little-known but effective strategy to help cover costs of routine medical and dental care and catastrophic care such as cancer, kidney disease, heart attacks, and stroke. Imagine buying a policy that will pay you if you are diagnosed with a catastrophic medical condition or you need emergency care, no questions asked. Whether you're a small business owner who wants to cover your employees or you have a high deductible plan, buying supplemental policy provides coverage you can actually count on to be there when you need it. It also covers preventative care such as mammograms. Imagine being paid to stay healthy. It's a no-brainer. Learn more by texting paid to be healthy to 36260 or go to www.aflac.com/Stephen_money. This is Dr. Elena George. Join me Wednesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. for Medicine on Call, a show dedicated to exploring the medical, social, and political aspects of our healthcare system in order to find solutions.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I'm talking to my producer in the break, and I see all of this, what you just described, all the system in Canada, slowly being put into place in our country by this artificial creation of lack. Not enough doctors, not enough hospitals. An article just came out recently about the rural hospitals closing, so people in rural areas don't have access. You have hospitals specializing, so there's ortho hospitals or children's hospitals. Everybody's got a specialty, so they're not stepping on each other's toes, but they're the only game in town. And patients are jumping through hoops to get into treatment, especially anything that's specialty related. So we're seeing this move in our country. It's like it's set up to fail, you know, create chaos, and the answer is single payer. You're just describing the fact that this is not going to work. So we live in a country where the insurance companies are king. How do you envision them falling in line? I mean, this has to work against them at some point, unless they're going to be the administrators of the system.
Right. Well, that's a very important point because, you know, in Canada, before the government took over the healthcare system fully in 1984, as I mentioned, we had private insurers. In British Columbia, we had Medical Services Association, Medical Services Plan, CUNC. And as they saw this coming, the insurer thought, well, we will be the insurer that's chosen to run the system.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were wiped out the next day. And I think in America, I think the insurance companies really need to think about, you know, where this is going, because the latest Kaiser Family Foundation poll showed 59% of Americans polled, of the Americans they polled, support single payer. One-third of those people were Republican voters. And so, during Obamacare, the insurance companies signed on to Obamacare. They supported it, whereas back when Hillary was, you know, running the healthcare, you know, her initiative under when her husband Bill Clinton was president, the insurance companies came out strongly, you know, against Hillary Care. But then in 2010 under Obamacare, they supported it, and I think they thought, well, with the exchanges, we will get a lot more patients, we'll do a lot better. Mm-hmm. But of course, they found out that they were losing money on their exchange plans, and the younger people had to subsidize the older people, so then younger people didn't buy coverage. I think the insurance companies really need to wake up today and say, there's a march on to single payer. You know, 5 years ago it was just a pipe dream. Today, you know, we have Senators Kamala Harris from California, Kristen Gillibrand from New York, Cory Booker from New Jersey, and Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, all, you know, thinking that they would like to run for get the nomination for the Democratic candidacy for the presidency in 2020. They've all signed on to Bernie Sanders' single-payer Medicare for All plan. These insurance companies need to wake up. If this happens in this country, they will all be out of business, and there will be no private insurers because the government will be running the whole system. So, you know, they need to really think about what this means for their business model.
Okay, well, that answers my question. I was thinking that maybe it would be a unique American solution, like a Medicare Advantage, where, because remember they went from dozens down to basically five big players, actually, and they wanted to make it three if you really want to talk about the failed consolidation that happened between, I think, Blue Cross and Cigna.
Yes, right, and then Aetna and Humana
correct.
Were trying to merge, too.
And, you know, that's such a huge lobby in our country. I thought that they might try to carve something out for themselves where they could make money by administering the plan and taking the heat off the government, so to speak. But either way, it's not the patient or the doctor controlling this type of system. And what the patient needs and what the doctor wants to do to help their patient is secondary. And that's a problem.
No, exactly. And, you know, I think, you know, when people like Bernie Sanders say, you know, Medicare for all, it's free. As I mentioned, Canadians have to pay hugely in taxes for ration care and long waits. But, you know, the number of Americans we have, what, about 60 million Americans are over 65 and on Medicare. But a large number of Americans on Medicare have Medicare Advantage supplemental plans, right, which they're paying, you know, $400 to $500 a month for. Because, as we talked earlier, you know, a lot of docs won't take Medicare because of the low reimbursements under Medicare Part B, the doctor part of Medicare. And so people have to go out and buy a supplemental plan, paying $400 to $500 a month, so that they can, you know, get a doctor to take them. So, you know, for Bernie Sanders to say Medicare is free, we pay through the nose as working people, but also then to have to go out and buy as a retiree, you know, supplemental coverage, is something that's not, the public just doesn't realize that.
No.
Until they're retired.
Absolutely. And you're still on the hook to, you know, you're still rationed in a way, because if Medicare doesn't cover it, you can't use your Medicare Advantage plan to pay for whatever you want either. You know, it's the same thing with the health savings accounts. You may think that it's your money, but it's being controlled and manipulated, administered by a third party. And it's arbitrary most of the time. You know, what's medically necessary that is in a physician, you know, a specialty society's code of treatment or ethics, whatever you want to put it, if the insurance company says it's medically unnecessary or experimental, they're not covering it. And that's the same thing, it seems, that it goes on in Canada as well. If the government doesn't pay for it or says it's not covered, where do you go? I mean, you just don't get it, or you leave the country, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, I think a lot of people in the U.S. don't realize is that, you know, in a country like Canada, you cannot call up a specialist. Like your OBGYN, yeah, or your dermatologist or your cardiologist, you have to first go to a primary care doctor who then determines whether you actually need to see a referral to a specialist. And then you have, as I say, an average wait of over 5 months. But, you know, the other point is that you may be, if you're, like, say I'm a mediocre neurosurgeon and you're the best, but if Dr. Jones, the primary care doctor, is my friend and refers to me, then you have no choice but to get maybe perhaps not the best specialist. Whereas in this country, you know, most people think nothing of calling their dermatologist. They make appointments directly. They don't have to go to primary care first in order to then wait to get a referral. But, you know, you're not tied to, mm-hmm, who does your doctor have an association with, because if your doctor is mediocre, his specialist referrals will also be to mediocre specialists.
That's a great point. And since you have different, you know, you have, I'm sorry, I forget the term for it, but if you're in Ontario versus Quebec or, you know, whatever location you live in, you're not allowed to go outside of your where you live, are you, to go across the country to get a second opinion or get treatment, are you?
No, because each province, we have the Canada Health Act, the feds transfer funds from that are raised in taxes to the provinces, but the provinces collect their own taxes for their health care systems. And so, no, you can't just say, well, I think now I live in British Columbia, I think I'll just go to Alberta and see, you know, if I can get treated right away. What they do is, for example, a few years ago, there was a woman in Calgary, Alberta, which is sort of, Alberta is the most American of the Canadian provinces because of the oil and gas industry. There's a lot of Americans live in Calgary were there for a few years while they worked for an American company. But this woman was expecting quadruplets a few years ago, and when she went into labor, there wasn't a single bed in Calgary, in Edmonton, which is the capital of Alberta, or anywhere where they could find a neonatal unit that could deliver these quads. And so the couple were airlifted to Montana, where in the U.S., where the quads were delivered successfully, And then they went back to Alberta, and this family said the Canadian healthcare system is that of a third world country. And they were so pleased that they had an escape valve, that they could go to Montana and these babies could be delivered. And my question to Americans is, if we get such a system, where are we going to go to get our health care when it'll take a few years to decline to, you know, what happens in Canada, what happens in the UK. But, you know, where will we go for the finest health care? Because the best doctors, as I said, will retire early. They will go into other professions. They will, the best and brightest won't go into medicine. And so that dumbs down the whole healthcare system. Whereas, you know, we've talked about people come from all over the world to get the finest healthcare. And it is expensive. But America is a wealthy country, and Americans are impatient. My mom used to say, when I moved to the U.S., I hope you're not going to become one of those impatient Americans. Well, Americans are impatient, and if they think they have a headache and they think they need an MRI, they're basically at their doctor saying, and I want the MRI tomorrow or next week. I don't want to be waiting, you know, 3 to 4 months to get this test. So when you demand a lot, it is expensive. And for, you know, as I say, 160 million Americans out of 330 million have employer-sponsored coverage. And it's what we call first-dollar coverage. Most people don't have any idea, you know, what their company is paying for their health care. And so when you think something is free or you think it's inexpensive, you use a lot more of it. The late Milton Friedman, my mentor, used to say health care is one of those goods that people have no idea of the cost. When they think it's free, they demand a lot more of it. And he always used the example of the Hershey Chocolate Company in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where people lived in Hershey housing and shopped at Hershey stores. When you didn't know that steak was more expensive than hamburger meat and it was covered, you put the steak in your basket, not hamburger, or you didn't delay, you know, buying the best thing. So I think we have to be very, very careful. And in fact, I think it was a problem during World War II when wage and price control were in. The federal government got us into this mess by giving employers the ability to write off the cost of health care and for employees to get health care tax-free. Mind you, their salaries are lower because of that companies are paying for their coverage. But if you lose your coverage, if you lose your job, you go into the individual market, you have to buy your health care with after-tax dollars. So this was a big distortion to the market, and ultimately, I think it should be, you know, eliminated. But in the meantime, I think that Americans who are in the individual market should be able to purchase their health care tax-free in the same way that those who have employer-sponsored coverage get theirs.
Every time the government tries to put a finger on a scale, there's an unintended consequence. Or maybe it's intended, I can't say. But there is a consequence. And it usually costs people more money, especially if they want to be free-thinking and independent about their choices. And in this case, it's kind of the opposite, though. Because if you're paying for your own health care out of pocket, it's cheaper than using an insurance plan at this point, because there is a free market still in the United States, and that market is thriving, and the real cost of health care is a fraction of what this ginned-up artificial system has created. It's completely bloated. You know, honestly, if we had just listened to the doctors who are practicing, not the academics, not the people who want to control the world, but people who actually see patients daily, I don't think we would have been in this situation ever.
No, you're absolutely right. In December, I participated in a debate at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California, and it was a real eye-opener for me, because the moderator was for single-payer. The two doctors who I was debating were single-payer advocates, physicians for national health insurance, and another was a professor. And there were about 300 second- and third-year medical students in this auditorium where I was speaking. It was, of course, another balanced panel, one against three. But while I was speaking and talking about the Canadian system, the British system, and where we were at the time with Obamacare, it was not repealed and replaced under the Republicans having the presidency in Congress. Students were snickering, laughing, talking. I mean, it really was a shock to me that these students trained by academics in the medical schools are so indoctrinated with the idea that the only kind of healthcare system that would work would be a single-payer system. They had absolutely no idea of what it would mean for their ability to practice medicine.
That's tragic. On that note, let's take one last break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Do you have a problem with the feeling of something stuck in your throat? Throat tightness, bad breath, a chronic cough, or frequent throat clearing? Maybe you have acid reflux, which is a common problem. Or maybe you have persistent ear pain, ear clogging, or ringing in the ears, but have been told you don't have ear infections. Perhaps it's because you grind your teeth at night. Sometimes the symptoms don't seem to be connected to an underlying problem. Sometimes the answer to a nagging symptom that doesn't go away or respond to treatments can be found by having your doctor give you the time to explain exactly what's going on in order to discover the root of the problem. This is Dr. George from Medicine on Call. I believe in taking the time to perform a thorough examination, discuss the findings, and answer your questions, because I believe that our patients are empowered when they're given all the treatment options. It's simple. When you understand the problem, you get to decide which treatment option works best for you. It's all about the power of choice, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. For more information or to make an appointment, go to www.peachtreeentcenter.com. That's peachtreeentcenter.com. peachtreeentcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Sally Pipes. She is the author of several books, and the first one was Miracle Cure, How to Solve America's Healthcare Crisis and Why Canada Isn't the Answer. And I think we spent a majority of our time really elucidating that fact and the movement of our healthcare system and the training of our medical students is, I'm a little bit frightened about what's coming down the pipe. You just described the future medical workforce, the future physicians, really not having any clue. Do they not take the Hippocratic Oath? Do they not understand that if they're not the advocate for their patient and they don't have power with along with the patient in healthcare decision making, that it's not healthcare, it's control?
No, exactly. And, you know, I was just going to mention that my niece graduated in May of 2015 as an orthopedic surgeon in Canada. Neither Megan nor any of her classmates were able to get jobs after spending, you know, 5 to 6 years training as orthopods, were able to get jobs as orthopedic surgeons. And it's interesting, there's a huge waiting list in Canada, in all of the provinces, for people getting hip replacements, knee replacements, different shoulder surgeries. And yet, the graduates from the medical schools cannot get jobs because the provinces can't afford to hire them. Megan just got a position last September after doing locums for doctors, you know, in general practice over 2 years. And so it's really a shame that if we get single payer here, our students will graduate as specialists, but then there won't be any jobs for them because the federal government will not be able to afford to hire them. So people will face long waiting lists, and people think, well, you know, it's not a big deal if you have to wait for shoulder surgery, knee surgery, hip surgery. But it is, because there's a cost to being, for people being in pain and not being able to work at their full capacity because they are in pain. So it may not be, you know, like having brain surgery, you need it right away, but still there is a cost to being, you know, to suffering from terrible hip pain, back pain, knee pain. And so, you know, this is something that people have to keep in mind, that, you know, the waiting times affect your ability to do your work or to take care of your family or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'd like to just change gears, because we don't have a lot of time left, but I'm curious about the innovation. You know, one of the things that I think the United States makes our system so special is innovation. You know, cutting-edge techniques, new equipment, new ways of doing the same old, minimally invasive. Is that the same thing that goes on in Canada? I mean, are you guys seeing a growth of innovative medical services, or is it really nothing changes because they can't afford for it to change?
Well, you're absolutely correct. In Canada, there is no innovation in healthcare. It's all done in the United States. I mean, back in the day when the government was not involved in healthcare, I mean, some of the finest discoveries, like the discovery of insulin by Drs. Bantam and Best in Montreal, the Montreal Neurological Institute. You know, these were fine systems, and there was a lot going on. Canadians were, you know, competitive with developing things. But since the takeover of the healthcare system, that has completely declined. And the United States is where the innovation in medical device, in pharmaceuticals, takes place. I mean, you see all the pharmaceutical companies, for example, they don't, if they're a Swiss-based company or a British company or a German company or a French company, Sanofi, GlaxoSmithKline, they don't do their research and development in those countries. They do it in the United States because the U.S. does not, at this point, have price controls on pharmaceuticals. So, you know, only 1 in 10 new innovative drugs actually makes it to market. The cost is about $3 to $5 billion and 10 years of hard work. Most don't make it through the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
And so these countries do not do that work. So other countries free ride off our innovation. But, you know, in a country like Canada, a lot of the latest drugs, a lot of the latest medical devices, like MRI machines, positron emission tomography machines, they are all in very short supply because they're too expensive for what the government is prepared to pay. And so patients pay in having to wait, as I say, over 3 months for an MRI mm-hmm. because there aren't enough MRI units or CT scans or PET scans. All of these things, when government controls, you have a decline in innovation, research and development, and who suffers? Patient suffers. And that's why, you know, I am so adamant about the United States not going down this path to single payer. And when you see, you know, California with their bill that passed the Senate, it's just been installed in the assembly. But that bill for a single payer in this state was going to cost $400 billion. And the total budget of the state of California is only $185 billion. So the tax increases would have been huge. Doctors would have moved to other states. And the best and brightest residents that graduate from, say, Stanford Medical School, UCSF Medical School, would not stay to practice in the state of California. But if the whole country gets this system, you know, as we've talked about, this mm-hmm. would be very bad for the future of medicine. These, you know, we want to keep innovation R&D alive. We want to continue to attract the very best and the brightest. But countries like Canada, you can't, you know, if they can't afford the even at a discounted price for a drug, many drug companies offer the latest drugs to Canada at lower prices because we pay for the R&D mm-hmm. as patients. But even then, many of the provincial healthcare, the government agencies will not bring the drug on because they think it's still too expensive to go on the formulary, which then is harmful. And, you know, it's, for every $1 spent in newer pharmaceuticals, we save $7.17 in healthcare costs, according to Frank Lichtenberg from Columbia. You know, in many cases, you know, you don't have to have surgeries today, mm-hmm. which are, you know, debilitating and there's a risk with the anesthesia. But, you know, in many cases, drugs can now solve issues that before they could not. And so, you know, this is something that, you know, people need to think about. We need to keep that R&D pipeline for drugs and medical devices, you know, open in this country because other countries do their R&D here, not in their own home country.
That's a really good point, and that's so underreported. I mean, everything just seems to be anything to push an emotional button. Somebody took something from you. You need to, you know, you deserve free care. It's healthcare is a right, and doctors need to do whatever you ask them to do. I mean, that's the thing that's driving this. It's all emotion, nothing rational. And the people who are proponents of the Bernie Sanders plan, you know, do they even understand? I mean, they're mostly lawyers, basically. Do they ever, I know this is kind of a rhetorical question. Do they speak to doctors, or do they just think they know so much that they can just run a system like it's like everything else? It's not like everything else. It's a very personal system, you know?
Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders is out there preaching, you know, he went to Canada last fall and spoke at the University of Toronto and said, you know, to a full house, you Canadians need to get out and shout from the rooftops about how wonderful your healthcare system is. Well, you know, never talking, of course, about, you know, what the system costs or how it's paid for. But we need to We need to let Americans know, we need to educate Americans on why this is not the best type of system for us. We need more doctors, we need more types, we need fee-for-service medicine, we need HMOs, we need PPOs. We need to have a safety net for those seniors who could not afford to have their own health care. But why should we, you know, have the government, you know, slowly encroaching? It's amazing to me that there are now, under the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, 76 million Americans are now on Medicaid. And as I said earlier, mm-hmm. They're having a hard time finding doctors because of low reimbursement rates. So emergency room use is up by Medicaid patients because they can't find a doctor who will take them. And this is the same thing that will happen fully in this system if we move down this path to what Bernie Sanders, you know, wants for America. And it's very expensive, and it results in ration care and long waiting lists, just as it has in Canada and the UK and in other countries that are experiencing problems as well with the government funding for health care.
I mean, the government can't run its own programs right now. I can only imagine how horrible it would be to expand it to over 300 million people when it's already broken. I mean,
yeah, I was when Obamacare was being debated, I was on a national show, and a woman from a small town in Wisconsin called me. She was in a line at the post office in this small town, I think it was Appleton, Wisconsin, and she said, everybody, there was one wicket open, there were three postal workers behind, but none of the other wickets were open, and people were kind of stomping their feet. They were all upset that they had to wait so long to get to the head of the line. She said, I stepped out of the line and I said to people, you're all upset about waiting to get postage stamps or mail something. Under Obamacare, this is what's going to happen, and you'll be really upset when you have to wait in line for your health care. This is how government runs things. And I thought it was really a very important point, because whether it's, you know, the Postal Service waiting at the Department of Motor Vehicles, people need to think what it's like when government is the sole provider of a service.
That's all you need to say. In the 30 seconds we have left, how can people buy your book, all your books, as a matter of fact, and hear you?
Well, thank you. My new book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare, published by Encounter Books in New York, is available on Amazon.com. All of my books are available on Amazon.com. They're all listed on our website, www.pacificresearch.org. And it's been such a pleasure chatting to you today.
Oh, it's just wonderful. I'd love to have you come back and delve into some more, you know, unique issues that nobody ever talks about, because you're a wealth of knowledge, and I want to thank you for being on the front line and having our backs as doctors and patients.
Well, keep up the fight too, because we need doctors to actually talk and educate Americans on what this would mean for their patients' health care.
Will do. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Dr. George from Medicine on Call. Healthcare reform is confusing, but one thing has become obvious. Whether it's finding an affordable insurance plan, keeping your doctor, or being able to afford needed prescriptions, navigating the healthcare system has become a challenge. With the loss of the Obamacare mandate, those needing help can now choose an affordable alternative. By joining Liberty HealthShare, you'll become part of a community of health-conscious Americans all over the country who want to control their own healthcare costs and choices. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It's an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share their medical needs, neighbor helping neighbor. Medical, surgical, and some alternative holistic treatments are covered without restrictive doctor and hospital panels. Plans start as low as $107 a month for an individual and $345 a month for a family. Healthcare without the hassle. What a simple concept. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org or call 1-800-714-6993.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Gold.
For Love Radio.